Hello and welcome to I Wish I Knew That About Songwriting, the show that brings you tips, tricks and techniques that we wish we knew as young songwriters. We're going to focus on interviews, resources and subjects that you will find useful and you can use them today. Thank you so much for listening and welcome to the show. This is an interview that I had to grab. So I'll tell you a little bit about the beautiful gentleman we have with us today. In terms of the context, I think it was maybe on the end of last week, James and I, not the artist we've got today, it's another man we've got for the artist, but James, as I know him, the great producer, he spoke about a few things that I had to kind of just go, man, I have to get you on the podcast and you can F the schedule. I just want to hear more about your music. And this was before I'd listened to Apropos, which is, I'm going to call it an album, because I believe it deserves that because of the amount of
it
love
is, yeah,
to it.
Yeah. I think technically it is an album. Yeah.
100%. Because when I then listened to it, I had this strange experience of not only loving what James has to bring to the show in terms of technical ways of thinking about creation, production, songwriting. I want to pull that out of him, but I truly believe that this is one of the best albums I've ever heard, if you add that, because that's empty praise. But what I mean is, I went for a walk and I listened to this record and I knew the context of your life. And I don't think there's a better example of why we should be writing songs in an industry that's caught up with like results, streams, marketing. Who's going to hear it? How should it sound? You've written something that truly I'm going to take time to appreciate and hasn't quite sunk in. When I listened to that, man, I honestly got quite emotional. I think you've written an album that should be the benchmark of like the emotional weight of writing a record. So welcome to the show.
Wow. Thank you. That was quite the praise and introduction. But I'm really glad it touched you, man. And I think, definitely, when it comes to, you know, my solo project, because I spend most of my time producing and mixing for other artists. But when it comes to my solo project, I think because I have a little bit of the luxury of it not being kind of my career path in that sense, you know, it is kind of more my side thing I just do. I think I'm not as focused on, okay, what's going to, you know, perform, what's going to this, what's going to that, because it's just my journal entries. And so I'm glad that it comes across, you know, as a record, right? Like as an album in kind of, I think the truest, most conceptual, you know, sense of that term, and something I feel like, you know, has been a little bit lost, as far as what an album actually is and
massively
to
lost.
Me, at least when
massively lost. And someone who's, I'm only interrupting him because he's a friend. I wouldn't try to do that in future, but.
Please do.
I'm really bad at it. I've known you for just over a year because we were part of a business group that has changed the trajectory of my career. You could look at that just in terms of numbers, but we are a brotherhood and it's rather strange to find that. And that's why when hearing your record, I was moved because you can do all the bells and whistles and the tricks. You do that for your clients all the time, but do you think you make decisions when you're writing for yourself, journal entries, as you said, that you would never make for clients?
Yeah, to some extent. I think that in the past, my decision-making has been driven a little bit out of, I think, fascination and obsession. So in other words, kind of getting really enraptured by sounds and doing what feels most true to that artist that I'm inspired by at any given moment. I think my decision-making process on this album was very much just purely influenced by what I felt like the songs were calling for. In that way, my decision-making process isn't any different from what I would do with an artist, right? Because that's what I try and do ultimately as a producer and even as a mixing engineer, is being like, this is what I feel and what, based on what, you know, this artist has communicated with me, this is the DNA of the song. And let's go for that. So I guess it's like a yes and a no. Some of the very small like creative decisions as far as like, oh, I'm going to distort the sound to the most maximum potential to try and just turn up this emotion, or on, you know, on the song Hard Turning Coal, my falsetto is like super, super auto-tuned. And that was a creative decision I made based on sonically what I felt like was getting across the picture and the emotion the best. And I might not do that, you know, to another artist because it is a little bit of a risk. Like auto-tune, for instance, very divisive thing. It's like either people love it or hate it, or sometimes people don't notice it. But most of the time when it's that strong, like people are really noticing it. And I knew that that was going to be something that would divide that song for people and be like, oh, you know, no, I don't like it because it's this effect. So for another artist, I think the conversation would be a little bit more involved. I guess maybe that's the difference. It's not that my decision-making is different. It's just the conversation might be more involved and really talked about, like, is this where, as in when it's me and my own, it's either yes or no. You know what I mean? I don't know. Does that answer your question?
It did. I think it sparked in my head when I invited you on. Just the idea that when we write a record like this, and when we're producing for ourselves, and the function is you expressing an incredibly difficult time, when you do that with those strange, quote unquote, strange production choices, I actually think you return again, not only to the meaning of what an album is about. That's why I think it's one of my favorite records and I'm trying to understand it for my own humility. Mm-hmm. But also yeah. when you produce like that, you actually go like, this is what auto-tune is. Not T-Pain. It's not like early like 2000s. It is, by the way, King. But what you've done there is almost like brought back the beauty of not only auto-tune, but brought back the beauty of why we should be writing songs. It was like somewhat of a revelation for me to hear that.
I think one of the artists that's like very credited for doing that and taking things that we know to be one thing and kind of turning them into something else is somebody like Bon Iver, when he started to get more experimental, because he started using, you know, vocoders and these effects and then kind of mashing them into his own thing. And that's somebody I think of a lot when I think, or James Blake, I think is, you know, one of the most unsung heroes of kind of that using things that aren't normally used in this context to therefore spur something further. And, you know, obviously he's not in such a great light in recent years, but, you know, somebody like Kanye can't be uncredited for the influence he's had in that respective way of using these things to make us feel something. I think that that's where that comes from, probably is just who I'm inspired by, you know what I mean? And my influences there. But I agree. I think it's using things that, because that's what people will say, you know, people who maybe don't speak production or don't speak this language of music making is like, that T-Pain sound, you know, it's like instantly tied to something. And I kind of like that. I think when people have an association, but it's like, this is nothing like T-Pain. Like, I am not singing about strippers in the club. You know what I mean? Like, but it's there, you know, and that similarity is there in people's minds. Kind of interesting. I think I don't know, for lack of a better term, sometimes get off on that. Like, I like that messing with that part of my own brain a lot of times, you know, and seeing where I can fit this in this.
But that's the beauty, I think, is that you're going into your own brain, because you work with a lot of clients. Since I've known you, you work with a lot of clients. You work with Dan Grimm at Dark Label. Your professional squared away side might lead you to kind of fall into repetitive patterns of, I produce like this and this template. But this record, it has your DNA. And actually, I'd like you to speak about what you mean by DNA and how you work with artists in that sense.
I think that is on both sides of the map, like you're talking like the professional side of working with artists. And then also something that I've, because of working with artists, I've also realized for myself and for my solo career. But to me, everything I do in music is driven by the search for someone's individual DNA as an artist. So if I'm working with an artist, that's what we're doing together. And then if I'm working on my own music, that's what I'm trying to do with myself. And what that looks like to me is your DNA is the culmination of everything you grew up listening to, you're inspired by in the moment, you're influenced by, as far as, you know, maybe growing up, you listened to this and this, but then as you got into writing your own songs, you became inspired by great songwriters. Then maybe you sound nothing alike, but you love their texture, or, you love their bridges, or you love their, you know, certain elements that you might not be able to pin in somebody and say, oh, your sound sounds like Kendrick Lamar, and I can tell that you've been listening to a lot of him because your flows emulate this. It's an actual thing of, no, I might be writing a, you know, singer-songwriter song, but so much of my personal DNA is influenced by like 90s East Coast hip hop. And so what that looks like, and this is where I think for me, my DNA ties so much into production and mixing, because I am, I think, first and foremost, a producer and a mixing engineer, and then it's bled into my songwriting. And so this is where, when I say DNA, it flows into so many things. So if you're just a songwriter, your DNA might be, you know, deeply, deeply inspired by Joni Mitchell and, you know, another, you know, prolific songwriter of a different era. But then you might be also deeply inspired by the rhythms of something like R&B. And so you take the songwriting of Joni Mitchell with the cadence and the flow of, you know, Black Thought or any of your favorite hip hop artists. And suddenly you have something that's what I refer to as DNA, which is your, what makes you as an artist sound like you as an artist. And I think when you find that piece, and the reason my entire music career is kind of based around this pursuit, whether it's for myself or others, is because when you find that DNA, what happens is you can, you know, I can go jump on an EDM dance track, which I've never made. That's like one genre that I've never really super produced and I've never really super written for. But I know, because I know my musical DNA as an artist, and I find that out more and more as the years go on, I could hop on that track and I could write something or produce something that it is very distinctly feels like me still. And so I think it's a superpower in a way, that musical DNA, because it allows you as a songwriter, as a mixing engineer, as a producer, as a, you know, top liner, whatever you are, to go into a room and to essentially put your signature on something, no matter, it subverses genre and feel and sound and turns into something that's just irreplicable, you know?
I want to say preach on that, because I was sort of dropping out of trying to host and just trying to get my head around how important an idea that is, first of all, for people, and how practical it is too, because it, you have the ingredients yourself and what you love.
Yeah.
And I want to draw people's attention, because sometimes, even with me, for example, when people say I have an album, even a close friend like you has an album or a record, there's that laziness in our heads right now to jump in and do so. But I did, and I was rewarded for that, and that's why on the show, because to me that Jay Rentz record is worth putting down as a monument. But if people want to dive into something and I really understand your DNA, I feel like they should go from a song called Never Fade into Heart Turning Cold. And I talked about this before, but for people that want to understand contrasting, they want to understand DNA, they want to understand production choices, they also want to understand really brave and bare production for that first song. And then the second song, you've kind of proved your point, because it's so clearly you, that second tune, but what a different world. So what was that thought process there?
I think that is actually the perfect example of what somebody's DNA sounds like. So when I'm talking about my own DNA, this will kind of flow into, you know, what was the thought process behind that. When I'm talking about my own DNA, there's really three major things that I kind of cite as sources of, here's where I come from. And within those three things, there's worlds and universes of different sounds. But the three things would be my production and my love of sounds comes from dirty 90s East Coast hip hop and the grunginess and the lived in of those drums and those bass lines and those, you know, those sampled instruments and things like that. And then I have this deep, deep love of like soul and R&B and neo soul and these more melodic genres, that there is a deep emphasis on the emotion and the songwriting. And then if you get into genres like, you know, old school soul and neo soul, there's this deep emphasis on the humanness and making things, not making things imperfect, but just leaving imperfections within things. And then there's this third influence that pops in for me, which I feel like came a little later, which is the pop and the catchiness of the memorability of these melodies within pop and these melodic devices that are used to really make things feel really good to listen to, as opposed to just being very artistic. And so what that looks like then is within, so the song you referenced, Never Fade, is very sparse, like you said. It's literally was a, I put my phone on the bed, I sat down and I wrote this song, and then I would did maybe three takes on my phone, recording me with the acoustic guitar singing, and that's what's on the album is the
You're
third
kidding.
Take where I got everything. No, that's it. So, and the reason I did it that way was, again, going back, okay, the intention, the thought process is I want, that was the only song in the album that every song I had written just weeks after kind of certain things had gone down in my life and I was processing those emotions, and I wrote this song as kind of a benchmarker of me being like, wow, you know, I'm not feeling these emotions anymore that I've been talking about on this album. I'm just kind of thinking about how good my life is now, but the fact that there is this kind of looming presence and this thought of, man, when you're doing so good, but you know that somebody is out there hurting so much, and it's that dichotomy of being like, man, like, how is it possible to be, you know, so content and happy and okay, but have left a wake behind you of pain and, you know, based off your own ignorance and based off other people's choice, you know, all these things that go into that. And so that song, the reason, the thought process, this ties directly into your question, which is the thought process behind that song was, I need the storytelling. I need there to be nothing in the way of exactly what I'm saying. The lyrics and the guitar need to be the only thing speaking. And then flowing into the next one of being, it's kind of, you know, there's three songs leading up to that one, Never Fade. That's just the sparse acoustic one. And in each one is kind of chronologically going through, you know, starting at this moment of realization for me, going through my childhood and kind of some things I was realizing about the way I was raised and maybe the reason I, you know, had certain choices that I made. And then the next one being kind of this leading up to moment of when you realize that you're in a position in life where you are existing kind of for the benefit of somebody else and not for yourself. And then leading up to Never Fade, it's this time jump, almost the way in movies where the time jump, and I needed it to be this moment of sparseness and bareness where it was like, there is no mistaking what I'm saying here. And then jumping into Heart Turning Cold, the other track you reference, it jumps back in the timeline and it jumps into going chronologically again for the rest of the project. And in that track, so my thought process on Never Fade is just, it needs to be sparse. There needs to be a moment of pause for the listener and no mistake in what I'm saying. But then jumping into Heart Turning Cold, that song is a conversation, and the chorus of that song is two halves of it's two people thinking the same thing with completely different contexts on either side. And the chorus is, don't waste no time, don't waste no time on a heart that's turning cold, don't waste no time on me. And the thought process behind that is, you know, in relationships and in things, you know, any relationships, romantic friendships, anything, there's this two sides of a dynamic that can happen where one person is feeling very worthless and one person kind of realizes their worth. And the thought behind that chorus is it's a conversation that's happening between two people, or one person is saying, don't waste your time on me, I'm worthless. And one person is saying, don't waste your time on me, my heart is turning cold towards you. And so, my thought process on that was I wanted the production to feel very dreamy because it was all happening kind of in my head leading up to this conversation. And so I wanted, you know, even the choice we were talking about earlier of the auto-tune, I wanted it to be such a stark contrast of putting you in a different, quite literally, headspace. And that to me, I think my thoughts tend to be very rigid and logical and, you know, all these different things. And to me, the auto-tune really put it in this realm of when you're thinking these raw, real, vulnerable things, but they're going through the filter of your logic or, you know, these realizations. And so to me, the auto-tune kind of played that piece of it. It took it out of my own vocal voice and put it into the headspace that I was in. And then the, you know, lush guitars and the the synths and you have kind of my hip hop drums coming in, or these R&B neo soul drums that are very dirty and very dirty bass synth, and, you know, contrasted with really raw sounding acoustic guitars. I had this window that I would just throw open in the studio and just record my guitars with the outside apartment noise and things like that, because I wanted randomness and I wanted outside elements and chaos in a way. Because that's what those thoughts felt like to me, were chaotic, but I wanted it to be organized because that's how my thoughts go. So it was really the thought process behind it, jumping back to your original question, is I wanted a moment of contrast followed by a moment of absolute chaos that is put in such a way that it's gorgeous. And I think that's one thing I'm very fascinated with life in general, is contrast. So you have the contrast of this sparsity with this chaos, but then also within that, you have the contrast of, in this chaos, it's gorgeous and it's melodic and it's thought through, and there's this contrast in life of, you know, the beauty of me having this realization for myself of kind of my worth and my value, but then the chaos and the pain of, you know, how much that might hurt somebody else, or, you know, and so there's this always like this contrast, and I think that's, it was within those two songs from song to song, but then it's also within that next following song, Heart Turning Cold, there's that contrast, and it just, I think, further heightens the feeling of difference between those two songs.
Fuck. Just a bit speechless, because I don't want to ruin how deep that record has gone in terms of what we call prosody or unity, is that you opened a window deliberately while recording guitars, which most people would have a panic attack doing that, but you did it deliberately for the art of adding chaos to match how you're feeling in your production. I don't know anyone that, I'm sure there are people that do that, but this is my first kind of contact really close to someone I can ask about this stuff. And even talking about contrasting, big things in the show is contrasting. That's melodic, sectional, or lyrical. And then you've also gone for that unity and prosody. And I just want to comment, because I was trying to follow along, again, try and learn and take in what you're saying, because I'm guilty of letting it go by the logic instead of what you're trying to say and what people can learn from it. That was really rich. So thank you. It's really, really, really rich on what we're trying to talk about and the love of it. And I have to say, for Heart Turning Cold, with all of that cognitive stuff that came, even from Never Fade to Heart Turning Cold, and I dipped into other parts of the record as well while I was going over those a lot, when I heard the bridge for Heart Turning Cold, it's one of my favorite bridges. And it's strange to say, this is one of my favorite records, one of my favorite bridges ever at 27. Like you said, that chaos, but that beautiful dream-like chaos. And that bridge for me was a moment. And there were no lyrics. There didn't need to be lyrics. It's kind of what you were alluding to. Like, doesn't always need to be. You can just kind of like howl a bit. Like, get that wolf, that dog life. People get that feeling as well. And I thought that was a masterstroke, because you could have added lyrics, but you chose to muffle them.
Yeah. Well, and I think what's interesting about that is there are lyrics, but that are being very obscured, very intentionally. And it's cool that that bridge resonated with you so much. And I'm really glad it did, because I think that just goes to show how much power are in your lyrics. Because even, you know, you can write the lyrics and obscure them the way I did, but then they deeply resonate with people, because the way I'm singing those lyrics is making me feel a certain way. And then it therefore makes you feel a certain way, because sometimes the lyrics aren't the important part. It's how those lyrics make you feel and the performance that those lyrics bring out of you, right? Because that bridge was brought out of a moment of me just improvising and singing over this instrumental. And then it brought out these lyrics, and these lyrics brought out those notes that I would not have otherwise. And then therefore it created this moment, you know, and this moment that turned into what's now the bridge. And I think it's testament to, you know, the power of lyrics for you as a performer, rather than the power of lyrics for even the listener. What did the lyrics bring out of you in a moment that therefore translates non-verbally, just melodically, or the literal tone in the rasp of your voice, or whatever it is that really impacts, you know?
I just honestly, it's a bit too rich for my palate today. Absolutely smashing it. And I think there's a lot for people to listen to here. not only in your explanation, which again shows how much you've put into this, which is the main thing I want from this conversation, because I've been all over the place, maybe a bit too emotional to do a good job of hosting this chat, but I wanted to keep it loose because it seemed like a reminder to me, this is why people should fucking write music if they have the ability and the gift to produce it themselves. Go that deep. And spoke to James just before this to say, you know, I know the context of this record and the breakdown of that relationship and what it means to you. And that was really powerful for my experience of it. But how do you see this? You know, how do people get into a record that they don't know the details of?
My intent and purpose with this record is just, it is so much broader than my experience. And so with any music, I feel like there are, and that's what my favorite thing about music is, how many applications it can have to all different situations. And so when somebody is singing about found love, lost love, an accident that they were involved in, whatever it is, there are things within that, the same way cinema does this to us, or the same way, you know, your, you know, books or poetry, there's always these applications that I don't want listeners to listen to my music necessarily and think of what I'm going through, the context something I went through came out of. I want them to listen to it and think about how it makes them feel. And there's enough like context around these songs to where you can put pieces together, but that's not the point for me. That's not the point. The point of this song isn't even about, you know, love or these kind of things, or you know, lost love, or you know, whatever. It's about the personal journey of somebody going through these things and the moment of honesty that I had to have with myself for me to even, these songs to even come out, right? And so I think if there's something that I would say, it's like, okay, people wanting to get into this music or any music really, is don't think about what they were feeling. Think about what it's making you feel. And take a minute to dig in and take a minute to reflect. Knowing exactly what somebody else went through when they made something is very one-time gratification for me. It's very like, okay, cool. I listened to it the first time and I go, oh, wow, man, you know, and you empathize and you feel it and you're like, wow, that's crazy. But not knowing exactly what the context is and just having to put the pieces together, but having enough, you know, context within the material, I think it's like way more longevity giving, because it's like, oh my gosh, like I listened through and it felt like it really spoke this to me. And then I listened through again and it was like, oh my gosh, it really spoke this to me. You know what I mean? There's like these layers to it. And not that you can't have that if you know the full context, but I would say going in, you know, getting into this project specifically, I just wanted to inspire a moment of honesty with the listener and themselves. You know what I mean? A moment of honesty with the listener and themselves to say, what are the areas in my life where maybe I haven't told myself the full truth about what I'm going through? Because that's what it was for me. And that's what these songs were for me. And then also to people who are going through the same things or similar things, I think they will feel that. And what's going to happen is they're going to go, oh, wow, I'm not alone. You know what I mean? I'm not the only one who's went through this. When I was writing this album, the biggest inspiration to me, not even on a songwriting level necessarily or sonically, but just the way it hit me, was Adele's 30 came out right when I was going through kind of all these things. And I was like, oh my, I would just cry. Like, that is me. That she is me. And I've had moments with music where I'm like, wow, that feels like me or that. But this was like, no, we're like literally the same person. And obviously I can't know that. I have no relationship with Adele. And I honestly, to be fully blunt, I haven't even loved Adele's music that much, but there was key moments on that album where it was like when somebody's speaking so personally to you that you cannot get away from it, and they just hit, and it doesn't matter the sonic or the production or the mixing or whatever these things are. It's the, again, just like you're talking about with that bridge, it's the way that somebody's feeling that's translating, that hits something in you. And so I think that's my intention as far as when it comes to listening to the album, and what I guess I hope would people would do when listening to the album. If that answered your question, I think I kind of rabbit trailed again because I do that, but...
One and the same, man. We do the same thing, but it's really cool to see the way you fire through so many complex issues in your songwriting based on your understanding. And just to unpack that sense of why Adele hit you is because this record, I believe she chose to do it in like one or two takes. And she was talking about the breakdown of a relationship, similar context to you without giving away too much. And I think what you actually did was invite people in, but specifically there's a lyric. There's two things I want to say. I believe it's Never Fade. I'm sorry if it's not. But when you talk about at the start, you were destroyed. At the end, you've never been happier. And yeah. I want people to go and find and listen to the content because I've really undersold that. That's one thing. The second thing, you invite people to actually feel at the real depth of their emotions, not a surface level, non-committal song. When you talk about in the context, it makes sense, you know, wishing someone dead. But anyone that knows you, anyone listens to your music, you know, that's not at all what it sounds like, but feels like giving people the permission to really feel at the depth that they feel. That moved me and honesty. That was really like, you've sunken costs into this. Really do realize, despite your promises, that was what's beautiful as well. You promised to someone, I think it was one of your, going into one of your choruses or bridges, that I'm sad, but I'm even more sad that I promised these things. And you go through the kind of the vows that you give to someone, which was insane. And it very much did move me. And in a place where I haven't written much recently, I haven't felt very close to myself for a while. And I just went for a walk, had to get outside, and it inspired me hugely. And not only as your friend, but just to hear someone that's brave enough to put out music produced in that way, performed in that way, like very vulnerable performances as well, not trying to superficially keep your rep up, you know, you're just like, oh, here's the thing that I feel.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was listening to it, I came up with the idea of just a lyric talking about that is like, this feels like trying to outrun the rain. So far I've tried, but now I'm wet through. That kind of idea, like, so far I've tried to, but I can't get away from it. I'm still wet. I'm still trying. And that's what it felt like, is that you're swimming really hard against the waves coming in off the beach. And people can relate to that. Most people don't get past that experience. They're stuck in that. So as you said, beautiful, beautiful plants behind you, you've managed to find a new birth in your life, but hell, it must have been hard. And it felt like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think something to be said for what you said about, you know, being willing to kind of put out the true feeling of what you're feeling, not the candy coated version, the true feeling. I think what allowed me to do that was the work and the personal growth work of digging into, okay, why did I feel those things? Right? Like, why did I feel those things? Like, when you're in desperation because you've been ignoring yourself so long, you're going to have some wild thoughts, but not shying away from these thoughts, but actually leaning into them to inquire of them. And throughout the, so the first, I think, four songs, the first three songs, I don't know. There's this reoccurring theme through all of my work, always has been, but then throughout this album, very specifically, of inner demons and demons in your head. And, you know, these kind of things that we hide and we put up a facade, but really they're the things, you know, we're kind of running from the whole time. And my biggest realization during the whole process of kind of everything I went to, and then also, you know, this album, was this realization that the demons of fear and anxiety and stress, you know, whatever stress is, and, you know, negativity, whatever we spend all of our time running from, if we find a moment of quiet and sit down and we look those things in the eyes and we ask them, why are you here? What are you scared of? What are you running from? What I found personally was I found friends. I found things that I could sit down with that wanted to help me that I thought were trying to hurt me. And I found, oh, you're shaking, you're anxious, you're running after me because you're trying to tell me that there's this thing that I've been ignoring. And when I sit down with you, instead of running from you because you look scary, when I actually sit down and take a moment to get to know you, I find you're trying to tell me something. And that thing you're trying to tell me is the very key to unlocking the happiness that I've been running from you, thinking was ahead of me. But in reality, it was back the other way, me walking hand in hand with you, kind of to realize that. And I feel like dismantling those inner demons for me and realizing those are the exact things that actually have the ability to unlock this happiness I've been, you know, searching for, looking for my whole life. What I truly am stepping into now in my life and have been in for quite a few months now. And it just feels incredible. It's come from having those radical honesty moments of listening to and talking with those inner demons instead of booking it away from them. You know, I think that is what actually kind of unlocked that ability to write that way for me, because I don't think I would have written that way before. You know what I mean? I feel like this really was, I've had moments of that on all my other projects of writing that way, but this project is through and through that way. And I think that's what unlocked that moment for me of honesty and kind of that, like you said, like putting it like it is.
Incredible levels of understanding of songwriting, production, personal growth, scientific and therapeutic practices as well that you've looked at there. You sing it in a record, in an EP, in an interview, in a song, but that takes hundreds of hours of doing that to really see which way is forward. And I think that's really inspiring. I would hope, I found it personally inspiring and reaffirming as well, even if it's not new to me, it's reaffirming that someone I respect, both as an artist, but also as a human and as a businessman, thinks that way. And what's beautiful, which I could think I could learn from, is that you went and you did it. You put it out there and you put the time into something that is important, I believe.
Thank you. Yeah. And I do have to, you know, you spent a lot of time giving me praise and I appreciate that. And I do have to say that you and me knowing you, and then also things I picked up from you, were huge in me writing this album. Because there was one thing you told me, it was, I think, on one of the first calls I had with you, where you talked about the levels of lyrics. There's like level one lyrics, level two lyrics, and like level three lyrics and level.
Oh, lyrical deep diving.
Yeah.
No way. Oh.
And it was, you were talking about like the level one lyrics being, you know, kind of the surface of the first things that come out. Level two lyrics being like a little bit deeper, like you dive a little deeper, and then level three lyrics being like those core resonating lyrics. And what's crazy is that concept, I feel like I've used that concept so much in my production and my work with other artists, helping them. And I credit you every time, I will say. but like also then on top of that, for my own, for writing these, it was literally the process that I would work through. And that's the reason, you know, Heart Turning Cold turned out that way, is because I literally said to myself, I wrote that song just mumbling and improvising the way that I do. And then I sat down and I said, wait, okay, I love the rhythm and the flow, because I'm such a rhythm and a flow and a melody person first. That's where I've stopped a lot on my other projects, is I've written what first comes and I've stopped there because I love the rhythm and I love the melody of it. And this whole project was a really interesting challenge, is because I started to dive to that level three on every single song. And I said, okay, this is what I'm saying. What is it? Me. You know, and then I'd say, I'd hit that level two and I'd say, oh, this is what I'm meaning. And then I'd dive to level three and say, okay, how does this now, getting back to the rhythm, the flow, the melody of what I have, now what does this actually sound like in like execution? This would not have turned out if it wasn't for you. So I got to say that, because credit where credit's due. It really, really was like a breakthrough moment for me. And I don't even know if I've told you that yet.
That's complete news.
Yeah, it was a really breakthrough moment for me.
Because the same way that when you write this record, you didn't intend to have it hit me as it has and kind of shift me, like jerk me in a different direction in my understanding. Like those calls we had, I felt lucky to be able to talk to people like you. I felt very out of place in and amongst business owners. You know, they've been doing it with such love. So if that is helpful, I haven't got words. So that's awesome. Just the fact that you take that on.
Yeah, it was amazing, man.
And you don't need to credit me. I appreciate you doing so, but I think it's a tenet to pass on, because you've actually kind of made your own way into that idea. These ideas are supposed to be inhabited and used practically. So.
Yeah, well, it's helping me and it's helping a lot of other people too. That's been one of my favorite things out of the many things I've heard from you about songwriting. That just really, really impacted me. So. Not to be a cheesy plug for you, but it was impactful, and I mean it, and I mean every word of it. So yeah, it's definitely was a moment of realization.
Well,
for
thanks,
me.
Man. I think that will sink in later, so I'll spare the audience more tears today. But I'm really glad I managed to grab you. I'm really glad that it worked out that we could do it quickly, because I wanted to just get hot onto this and check out Jay Rents. Or do you want to direct into your production as well? There might be some people that are interested in working with you.
Yeah, so I go by Jay Rents Music on all platforms. It's JAY and then separate word RENCE. J-Ren's music on most social media and stuff like that. Like I said earlier, you know, my solo project is very much a side thing. I spend most of my time doing production and mixing for other artists, but with specifically the intent of really helping them elevate their sound by honing in on that musical DNA that we were talking about so much. So yeah, I think I don't work with everybody. And the reason being is some artists just want the hit. Some artists just want that, you know, slick production that kind of gets their song sounding like other things. The type of artists I work with are the type of artists who really, really want to do the work to find something to actually be kind of driving the ship, as it were, along the way. And I'm a very hands-on person the way I work like that. And so it's not just, it's not for everybody. You know what I mean? It's very intentional and it's very targeted at, like I said, finding your DNA as an artist. So yeah, that's the kind of people I work with. That's what I spend a lot of my time doing. Always happy to talk to anyone who wants to do that. You can get at me through, Instagram is typically the best way to do that. Send me a friend request on there, or I don't know, however you want to get in touch with me.
I jumped on a call and we had no idea who the other was. I think we came through Julian, Queen Julian. We love him. But we just got on that call and I said,
good Julian.
It wasn't just the glasses, the vibe, the hair, the handsomeness. It was just that bursting of energy. And that was at a time probably where you were really going through the worst of it. And we will make sure the links are put below. If people want to listen to your tunes, I would say that is the best place to start, because you'll understand that practical idea of DNA. I'd like to thank you for sharing this, because it will go out forever. And I think the things that you spoke about are forever appropriate, because you landed on concepts and shared emotions and practical things. I'll be definitely stealing DNA. You can do it like a little swap, and I'll be pushing that on people. Same. I like to work with people that actually want to work hard and have plans that last longer than the end of the month. And inspiring. I'm glad to be a friend, and I really appreciate you coming on tonight. So you take care, and I'll get this out to as many people as I can.
I'm grateful, man. Yeah, you too. Thank you so much for having me.
Hello there, sweet listener. Thank you for listening to today's show. And I just wanted to say, we do have an Instagram. I know that some of you guys are quite interested in just sending those private emails, and I promise you they are absolute gold dust to me. And I love receiving those emails when people get time to send them with their songs, with their questions. And mainly, I love your stories about how you're listening to the show, where you found it, what it means to you. Those are the things I'll probably take to my grave, to be completely honest. But if you want to be out there on social media, please get in touch. I wish I knew that pod on Instagram. We're going to be getting stuff up on YouTube as well. Reach out, send me a DM, send me a voice note, send me a video. I want to see you guys. I want to see your shows. I want to hear your songs. Thank you again for listening to the show. If you want to be involved and get full value for your creative process, please do so. But if you're one of those wonderful people that just likes to sit and observe, I know you're out there, and thank you so much for your attention. It really does mean a lot. So no need to get in touch, but if you feel like you want to be involved, please do so. Much love and bye-bye.